London newspapers for that year 1936, you may read how Myron Willard triumphed at Drury Lane as Macbeth. But tonight, as the clock ticks on, there is another drama in the dimly lighted corridor outside Box D. There sits Miss Louise Fenton, Marcia Blair's companion secretary. Beside her, burly and broken-nosed, is Big Jim Bradley, the ex-wrestler. And when more than half an hour has passed...
There's the applause, Jim. That must be the end of the first act.
Yes, I hear it. Nothing's happened. And take my word for it, nothing's going to happen.
Oh, she's such a likable person, Jim. And I think one of our greatest Shakespearean actresses.
Well, I don't much care for this Shakespeare business, miss. You give me a good movie with gangsters in it. It's my style.
Oh, you don't understand, Jim. I've seen her as Juliet, as Rosalind, as Portia. In our own drawing room, without any props. I've heard her as Lady Macbeth, too. You should see her eyes.
Her eyes, miss?
Yes, you should see her eyes when she delivers that speech. The raven himself is hoarse, that croaks the fatal entrance.
Hey, miss. Look there.
What is it?
That foreign-looking cove in the black cape. Coming along the passage now. Easy.
I beg your pardon. You are Miss Louise Fenton, aren't you?
Yes, my name is Fenton. What is it?
I am Ludwig von Arnheim, a friend of Mr. White's. And I must see Marcia Blair at once.
No, you don't, Governor. You're not going in there.
Why not?
Because nobody goes in there. Not if it was the king himself. That's orders.
Now, listen to me, both of you. When the lights went on, I happened to be looking at Box D from the other side of the theater. And I think there is something wrong.
But there can't be anything wrong. Jim Bradley and I have been sitting here the whole time. Except, of course...
Except when?
Well, except when I went in there for a few seconds.
You went in there, Miss Fenton? May I ask when that was?
Well, it was after Mr. White had gone and just before the play started. I went in to ask if she wanted anything. She said she didn't, so I came out again. And Bradley's been with me all the time, except when he went to get a drink of water up the corridor.
That's as true as gospel, Captain.
One moment and listen to me. Marcia Blair is leaning forward across the railing of the box.
Oh, but that's nothing, Herr von Arnheim. That's the way she always is.
Does she always fall forward with her arms held straight out and her head down on her arms?
Better be careful, miss. It's a trick.
Trick? Why not open the door and see for yourselves? Would that do any harm?
No, I suppose it wouldn't, but... Oh, there must be some mistake. We haven't heard a sound from in there. There couldn't be anything wrong.
You open the door, Miss Fenton. I'm going to hold tight to this gentleman just in case.
Quiet, please. Quiet.
What is it, miss?
Walk in there with me, both of you. Please go carefully, as though nothing were wrong. We don't want to attract attention. Now.
Oh, Herr von Arnheim. There's blood all over her face.
Yes. And don't begin screaming again, Miss Fenton, when I tell you she's dead. Bradley?
Yes, sir?
Pick Miss Blair's body up and carry her out into the corridor. In another minute, we'll have the whole theater wanting to know what's wrong.
All right, sir. You win. But what about the people in the other boxes? Won't they see?
They've gone down to the bar to get a drink. They won't see anything. Hurry.
She ain't no lightweight, the poor lady ain't. Steady, does it? Hold the door open. That's got it. Now, close the door. Shall I... put her down on the floor, Governor?
Yes, better do that.
I never took those threats seriously. That's what I blame myself for. And if something did happen, well, I thought he'd attack her. I never thought he'd hide away across the theater and fire a shot.
And you were quite right, Miss Fenton. Marcia Blair was not shot.
She wasn't shot.
No, take a look at the wound.
Oh, I can't look at it.
She was stabbed. Stabbed through the right eye with a narrow, sharp blade, which entered her brain and killed her instantly. Not a pretty death, but a quick one.
You seem to know a lot about this, Governor.
Perhaps I do, my friend, and perhaps I can guess a lot more.
You mean somebody stood out there and threw a knife at her? Like a ruddy music hall turn?
No, I don't mean that either. There's no knife in the wound and none in the box. The murderer took it away.
Took it away?
Exactly.
Herr von Arnheim, please wait. You're not saying someone climbed up from outside. 20 or 30 feet from the floor and stabbed poor Marcia in full sight of 3,000 people?
That, Miss Fenton, is what the evidence seems to indicate.
But it's impossible.
Yet it happened. There is Marcia Blair's body. What's that?
Oh, it's the warning bell for the second act. People will be coming back here anyway, any minute. What are we going to do?
Acclaim, triumph. Myron Willard is Macbeth. Helen Gale is Lady Macbeth. Magical effects by Ludwig von Arnheim. Very few persons knew that there is a dead woman in the theater. But at the end of the play, it is a different story. Crowd files out, past a cordon of police. The lights are extinguished. The great theater is dark and mumbling with echoes. See the stage now? Only the battens or overhead lights pour down a pale blaze on two men who stand grotesquely against the background of Dunsinane Castle. One of these men is Howard White, very near collapse. The other is Myron Willard himself, still wearing his makeup, still wearing helmet and chain mail. And when Willard speaks...
Howard! Howard White! Confounded man, can't you hear what I'm saying?
Excuse me, Madam. This is almost finished.
Well, not that I'm blaming you, old man.
Thank you, Madam.
It's traditional, you know, that Macbeth's an unlucky play... But up to the very end, I thought I'd never done better. 11 curtain calls. No, 12. How did you like my Tomorrow and Tomorrow speech?
I'm sorry, madam. I'm afraid I didn't hear it.
Yes, poor old Marcia. She'd have hated to die like that. Marcia was proud of her eyes. Always nearsighted as an owl, but too vain to wear glasses. There's von Arnheim looking at us from under the castle archway. Von Arnheim!
Did you call me, my friend? You're rather difficult to recognize under all that Macbeth makeup.
Yes, I was just thinking the same thing.
Never mind that. Where are the police now?
At the moment, Mr. Willard, the police are in your dressing room. They are using it for questioning.
No reception tonight, of course.
No, but I thought you might be interested in two items of information that police have just discovered.
Go on.
We had a fairly full house tonight, I believe.
Fairly full. Every seat was reserved.
Reserved, yes, but not occupied.
I don't follow you.
One box on the ground floor, box E to be exact, was empty. Reserved and paid for, but empty. And box E, oddly enough, was just underneath the one occupied by Marcia Blair.
Well, all the same, I still don't see quite what you're...
Now, our next item of information comes from an usher. An outside aisle seat in the stores, very close to that empty box, was occupied by a very curious stranger who arrived late in the dark and slipped out again by a nearby exit a few minutes afterwards.
Just one moment, von Arnheim. Are you saying this stranger climbed up and attacked Marcia in full view of the audience?
No, my friend. The murderer did not approach from that direction.
Then he must have reached Marcia through the door guarded by Bradley and Miss Fenton?
No, not from that direction either.
Confounded man. It must have been one way or the other.
Not necessarily.
Tell me, Howard, don't you think I've got enough troubles already without this nightmare on top of it?
Herr von Arnheim. Herr von Arnheim.
You must take it easy, Miss Fenton. You must not excite yourself. Have the police...
Yes. Look, you've got to help me. They won't believe me.
They won't believe the young lady, sir, and that's a fact. I tried to help her all I can, but there's things I can swear to and things I can't.
You see, I did go into that box. Oh, just for a couple of seconds, I admit it. But no other person went in or could have got in. So they say, or at least they're hinting, that I killed her. But I swear I never touched her.
Who was questioning you, Miss Fenton? Inspector Grimes or Sergeant Blake?
I'm Well, I'm not sure. The sergeant, I think.
Then I shouldn't worry if I were you. Inspector Grimes knows better. He's guessed, in fact, exactly what I have guessed.
You seem on rather familiar terms with the police, my friend.
I am, Mr. Willard. I am. Anyone who practices escapes from handcuffs, sacks, chests...
And stage boxes, perhaps.
Stage boxes, if you insist. Excuse me. Isn't that Inspector Grimes in the wings now?
Yes, and he's nodding his head.
Then I can tell you, I think, what you want to know.
Well, if you do happen to know anything, it's your duty to speak up. Poor Marcia seems to have had some ridiculous idea that her former husband, Barry Lake, was still alive. Her fears weren't justified, of course, and she wasn't killed by any dead husband.
I beg your pardon. Her fears were justified, though not quite in the way she believed. And she was killed by her husband.
Then Barry Lake is still alive.
No, Barry Lake is dead.
You don't mean Marcia was really killed by a ghost?
No. I mean she was killed by her devoted second husband, Mr. Howard White.
You know, hear what they say? That's not true. It's a slanderous statement. I'll have you in court for it. Everybody knows how devoted I was to Marcia.
Your devotion, my friend, was devotion to her money. And your business affairs have been shaky for a long time.
That's not true, and you can't prove it.
Marcia Blyer was inclined to be, shall we say, a little close-fisted with money.
That's true anyway.
It's a lie, a lie.
Willing to marry him, but Mr. Howard White knew he'd never touch a penny unless he killed her. He wrote the letters himself.
Herr von Arnheim, he can't be guilty. She was alive after he left the box. He wasn't anywhere near her when she died.
Perfectly correct, Miss Fenton.
He wasn't there, and yet he killed her.
Exactly. But you and Bradley can supply the clue that will hang him.
Me, sir? I don't know nothing.
No, I don't either.
I think you do, if you'll put your mind to it. Do you remember what Howard White said to her just before he left the box?
Yes, he said, "Good night, Marcia. See you in an hour or two." And she answered, "Good night and good luck."
No, I mean just before that.
There wasn't anything.
You see? It's a slanderous statement without any proof. It's an insult to my position on the stock exchange.
Wait. I do remember something rather queer.
Think, Miss Fenton, think.
He said to Marcia jokingly, "If you'll accept these, madam, in honor of our first anniversary." And Marcia said, "Howard, they're lovely. Of course I'll accept them."
That's right, sir. He did say it.
And what do you think he was referring to, Miss Fenton? What was he asking her to accept?
Well, I imagined it was flowers, a corsage or something like that.
Did you see any flowers in the box or pinned to Marcia Blair's gown?
No. Come to think of it, I didn't.
Then what did he give her?
Don't look at me, sir.
Now, here is a woman who is very nearsighted, yet refuses to wear glasses. But she can accept a pair of...
opera glasses.
Miss, a lie, you can't prove it.
Hold on, sir. Just
go.
You better stay here, Governor.
Thank you, Bradley, but the place is surrounded with police.
But I still don't understand.
Now, what happens when you lift opera glasses to your eyes and they are not in focus? You turn the little wheel in the middle to bring them into focus. For Marcia Blair, it was deadly.
You mean the glasses had... Something?
Yes, they were specially constructed glasses, Miss Fenton. They were invented by a French criminal years ago. That little wheel is a little trigger. It releases the spring of a sharp, thin blade which strikes through the eyes into the brain.
Oh, don't, please.
You can't prove it.
Marcia Blair died instantly. The glasses torn from her eye by their own weight dropped over the box rail to the carpeted aisle below. The only witnesses who might have noticed would have been the people in the box just underneath.
And that box was empty?
By arrangement, yes. Even if anybody did see them fall, Howard White was prepared to remove the evidence instantly. You haven't forgotten the curious stranger.
Curious stranger?
I mean the man who slipped in after it was dark, took an aisle seat just under the box, and slipped out again a few minutes later.
It's a pack of lies from start to finish. You can't prove a word of it.
I beg your pardon, my friend. Didn't you see Inspector Grimes nod to me a moment ago?
Well...
You are going to hang, my friend, for one of the neatest and cruelest crimes in my experience. The police have just found those opera glasses with a neat set of fingerprints in the side pocket of your motor car.
And so ends Fire Burn and Cauldron Bubble, starring the distinguished actor Paul Lucas. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is your narrator, Ted Osborne, the man in black. William Spear, the producer, John Dietz, the director, Bernard Herrmann, the composer, conductor, Robert Salmon, studio technician, and John Dixon Carr, the author, collaborated on tonight's suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence in You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Loos.
Back at it.
I thought he was asleep. No. We've had a wonderful morning with both the supervisor of the town of North Hempstead and Aaron Riley, who is the sustainability chief, giving us just the stuff that's going on, the stuff that's going to be coming. This is really, it's a pleasure to be a part of the town of North Hempstead. But it's more than a pleasure to be involved with the Christina Lu Show.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, God, I missed that, guys. It's been a couple of weeks. Yeah. Okay.
Because this is where it's happening.
It's the live audience.
Oh, okay. No, that's right. Live audience. There's some people outside when I pulled up this morning.
Yeah.
They were waiting.
I know.
To get tickets. We're going to start selling tickets.
In their Chase Lounge.
But before we start, Otto, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Now, and this is not a religious question, but I think everybody in the country knows that Lent is 40 days.
Right.
And it started a couple of weeks ago with Easter coming up at the end of March. What is 38 days?
38 days. Boy, that's a tough
one. It's as significant.
Yeah, very significant. I think that it's close to Easter, but it's basically Christina Lu's birthday.
Which is absolutely the same category as Easter, I would say.
It's around the corner.
It's hard to believe it's
we
that close.
This 360 days ago.
It's really,
the excitement is starting to build.
That's right.
And now we have a new room just for it.
That's right.
Yeah, they can't
see. I demanded
see
it.
Brand new room.
Christina, what's going on in the town?
Wow, well, it's great to be back. I feel like, you know, we haven't
had,
I know, it's I'm very excited to be back. And today's show is just like flying by. I think it was great that we had both of us kind of a Town of North Hempstead day was going on here. And it's always a pleasure having the supervisor herself on here. And it's just, it's jam-packed. You know, spring is coming, the nicer weather, so we definitely have a lot of programs coming up. But particularly timely, we wanted to remind everyone that there's this IRS scam that's going on. I know a bunch of people, Otto, might have been a victim to, you know, almost victim, I should say, to this. So, Otto, you want to tell us about the call that you got?
Well, actually, this past Monday at the New Hyde Park Advisory Committee meeting, they asked the question, how many people were hit by this phone call? And everybody in the room raised their hand.
That's
so there might be some of you who haven't heard it. I have it recorded. If you bear with me for a moment here with my technical
expertise
and the ability of my phone to...
My name is Dennis Gray, and I'm calling regarding an enforcement action executed by the U.S. Treasury in sending your serious attention. Ignoring this will be an intentional attempt to avoid initial appearance before a magistrate judge or a grand jury for a federal criminal offense. My number is 240-514-0158. I repeat, 240-514-0158. I advise you to cooperate with us and help us to help you. Thank you.
Now that is an actual recording of the phone call, and it could, you could easily be intimidated by that, but the reality of life is the IRS does not call people, they do not intimidate people, they do not send people to jail with a message on the phone. So the bottom line is, ignore these phone calls
and report it, you know,
and
also
it.
I think is
it's flagrant crime, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to steal money from you by intimidation, and don't fall for it.
The shame of it is, and we've done these Project Safe programs for the Attorney General's office, you can't stop them.
Right.
They change the number every
Absolutely.
Time, so you can't
no,
stop
them.
No,
there's a new scam, a new thing, you know, it's a, it just...
Right. And then my partner at work called the guy once, and what they tell you to do, and if you're scared about it, they tell you to go to the bank and make out a money order. And he says, okay, I'll make the money order out to the IRS. They said, no, no, no. Because your case has been given to an agent. You make the check payable to the agent, and he takes care of it. That's how it happens. So just say Otto was my agent. I make the check to Otto. You're cashing the check. God. I'm making it out to you.
All right.
But these people are afraid.
Right.
I don't know where they send the check to because he didn't get that far.
Right.
You're getting the check. I'm cashing the check, and I'm done.
Yeah.
And I'm gone. And I mean, the unfortunateness is the web. You know, it goes from this bank to the other bank, mm-hmm. and it's moved around so fast. It's not in it is. It's in the billions, but each individual scam is in the hundreds of thousands.
Right.
So it's not big enough for, you know,
technology. No, that's why I think, it's just, these kind of things, especially with tax season, there's all these things, and they kind of come up because they think, oh, this is the perfect time to invade, with this scam. And, whether it's that or trying to steal your identity, a lot of times with these things, too. And they've gotten so good, and there's so many apps, because I've seen people be able to do this, that you're able to actually change the phone number. So the phone number you see might very well look like it's a legitimate number from the IRS, because there's apps and all these different things that you have the ability to do that.
They're professional thieves, mm-hmm. is what it comes
absolutely.
Down to, who put tremendous energy into figuring out how to scam people, and they're going to be good at it.
Yeah.
And they're going to sound like they come from the IRS or Microsoft mm-hmm. when it comes to scams for your computer. And protecting your computer. There's a lot of it out there. Just be very reluctant, very leery. Worst case, call 311 and somebody could get back to you about the call and the legitimacy of the call. Do not commit to anybody.
Right. It's a numbers game.
Yes.
Right. They're going to get you.
Millions of calls.
You just said something very important, to call 311, mm-hmm. because many times a senior will do it and pay. Because they're afraid their adult children will think they're incompetent and say, Ma, look what you did.
Right.
You're an idiot. It's time to you go to a home. So they'll pay it because she didn't do her taxes, mm-hmm. which has nothing to do with this. So she'll pay it. I've seen it happen. I'll say, what did you do? Well, the man told me to, and I don't want anybody to know. You call 311, a social worker, in privacy. Mm-hmm. We'll discuss it with you and say, dear, this is not legit.
No, and I think, too, it's, we're lucky because we do have things like advisory committees and 311. And, that's what the perfect forum to share, different things that happen to you and just to kind of get the word out. Because, we're not going to stop what's going on.
But all we could do is
kind of educate about, what's out there currently.
If you want to retain your independence, then you have to be smart enough to get help mm-hmm. from people who can help you.
Yep.
There's no reason why you shouldn't do that.
Right. Absolutely. So just want to warn, let everyone know that, do not give any information out and, to absolutely call 311 if this has happened to you or whatever it might be. Well, we were laughing earlier because we said Supervisor Bosworth stole some of my content. But we just really wanted to. I think it's great that the town board passed the 5-year capital plan this week. There's also the ordinance we set up the presence of dogs on leashes in certain areas of North Hempstead, Beach Park, Tully Park, Mary J. Davies. So that's a nice little
And Christina
too.
Doesn't know how to get the geese trained either.
I don't know. I'm going to work on that when I get back to the office. I'm going to see if I can figure that one out. Yes. We'll start a committee for that one, Otto.
That would be good to have a committee.
There we go.
To figure out
we might be able to find a lot of people interested in that topic.
Geese control.
Here we go. What was also exciting this week was Governor Cuomo gave a press conference at the Yes We Can Community Center this week discussing raising the minimum wage to $15 per hour, which was quite exciting. And then this weekend, there's going to be the town's Veteran Advisory Committee will be meeting to talk about different initiatives for the spring, which is really, I know the supervisor spoke about earlier, but the Veterans Committee is really just wonderful, and they've come up with great initiatives.
Where do they meet?
They meet at Town Hall, I believe.
Town Hall.
Yeah, you can call 311 and they'll give you specifics, but that's where they have met in the past.
Do you have an idea of the time?
They don't. I just know it's Saturday. I'm not exactly sure what time, but you can always call 311. Yeah, and they'll connect you to the person who's on the head of the committee. Also, the supervisor will be celebrating Black History Month at the NAACP Long Island Region's Awards Luncheon. So that's a wonderful thing, too. And the town has been doing great, all different programs this entire month for Black History Month, which I just think is another wonderful thing, you know, that the town does is, you know, we were talking about earlier, just kind of recognizing all the accomplishments that have gone on within the town. So.
And the biggest piece of this whole thing is we are a town that works collaboratively. That's it. No matter who you are, if you can benefit us and we can benefit you, you know, not that we're looking, you know, that kind of thing. You work together and things go, that's the nicest way for things to proceed.
Absolutely.
We all work for the same goal.
Right, regardless of political party, regardless of who you are.
Right.
No, you all have the same, you know, and that's what I think too, especially when it comes to, you know, Project Independence in general. Oh. It's just a great program that, you know, everyone, no matter what you are, who you are, you know, you hope to grow old and age in the community. So it's just, it's great that we're able to kind of put our hands on deck with this, so.
And actually, we're going to jump right into our first break, and we'll be back with the Christina Liu Show. It's flying. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, WCWP.org.